Welcome to episode 419 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we have a wonderful conversation with New York City-based multidisciplinary artist and director, among other things, Rob Roth. This is the second time he's been on our program, I'm happy to say. And we focus mainly on his new film titled Blondie, Viver en la Habana. And what went into the making of it, with the themes, the soul, the crux of it all is. And that takes us to other discussions regarding humanity, to say the least. Wonderful conversation with Rob Roth this week. We also have an EWSA titled T for Three. And our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, shares an excerpt from an article titled Dreaming of Debbie by Lisa Lentini, published in the March 1st, 2021 edition of Spin Magazine. And we have a poem called Mantras. All of this, of course, is imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to have you with us. Let's get to it then. Episode 419 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
From the small place to a bigger city. Oh, it's a bigger bag to strap the ego of a little baby. It's like a discipline without the discipline of all of the discipline. It's like a culture without the effort of all of the culture. Oh, but I'm tapped to your pillaging and I'm tapped to your yesterday and I'm tapped to another reason I'm tapped to. It's like a movement without the bother of all of the meaning. It's like a discipline without the discipline of all of the discipline. It's like a fat guy in a t-shirt doing all the saying. It's like a couple dads and a few friends trying hard to stay in. With history and I'm tapped. Your past and easy, I'm tapped. You're pillaging and I'm tapped. For best results, well, I'm tapped.
T-4-3. I remember watching an art house film starring Parker Posey. She has such screen presence and an eccentric sort of vulnerability. It's hard not to be enamored. My early dreams last night, while laying happily next to my wife, included a visit from Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead. He is dead, and has been since the 1990s. I remember hearing about it on the radio when I lived in South Royalton, Vermont. In response, I stood on the roof of the second-floor apartment I was renting and listened to a cassette tape of the band. Two of my professors walked by on the dirt road below and waved. A train passed on the tracks elevated across the way. The engineer pulled the chain to blow its horn as the clink, clank, clunk continued on and faded into the day. I once attended a mesmerizing concert in the 1980s when I was in high school that featured on stage the band and the Grateful Dead. My friend, we call Cab, and I stood next to each other in the upper deck seats of Syracuse's Carrier Dome for 4 hours, getting high, dancing, singing, smiling, feeling connected to thousands and to each other, to ourselves. It was a great social gathering and celebration. Jerry, in my dream, walked onto a front porch carrying a teapot. He placed it on the banister and asked me how I was doing. He leaned back on the outside wall next to the window, put his foot on the banister next to the teapot, and listened. I couldn't hear what I was saying, but he seemed to respond with a look that communicated a notion of, "Lighten up, man. Have some tea." That's what I remember. I suppose I would go and gather some cups, and I'd like to invite Ms. Posey to join us, too. Tea for three. Jerry Garcia, Parker Posey, and me. And perhaps you.
That man, and they have one good ring, baby, you can't tell. Hello.
Rob Roth, is that you?
It's me.
All right. It's so nice to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours once again.
Yeah, I know. Again.
Again.
I have to post, pre and post pandemic, I guess.
I hope we're post. Yeah, I hope so.
Well, posting, trying, getting there.
Rob Roth is a multidisciplinary artist and director based in New York City. He has continually combined a variety of media in his distinctive works of art, using theater, film, audio, and performance. His work has been showcased at the New Museum for Contemporary Art, the Museum of Arts and Design, and the Whitney Museum of American Art, among others. He has conceived, staged, and performed in numerous theatrical works that have generated and garnered great acclaim, such as his 2018 theater film hybrid titled Soundstage. Roth has directed the music video Doom or Destiny by Debbie Harry, aka Blondie, featuring Joan Jett, which appeared on several Best of 2017 lists. He was creative director for Debbie Harry's New York Times best-selling memoir titled Face It. Something happening right now, very exciting stuff, is the premiere of a short film at several film festivals internationally, including the great Tribeca Film Festival that Rob directed, titled Blonde Viver en la Habana. Troubadours and Rock on Tours is very happy to have once again on the program artist Rob Roth. Wow, you do a lot of work.
It seems the way you read that, I guess, though, but I've been sitting on my ass for a year, so I don't know. Makes me feel like, did I do all that? When? But yeah. I mean, we're just like coming. The funny thing about the film is that it was supposed to come out in 2020, probably online, and then it got shelved, and that's how now it's in all these festivals. So it kind of, I don't know, the upside of a pandemic, it kind of wouldn't have happened this way. So in a way, I'm kind of surprised and pleased, I guess.
Well,
that it's getting.
I'm really impressed at how much attention it's getting, and to be in these very esteemed festivals says a lot about it's a short film, right?
And yeah.
How long is it?
It's 18 minutes, about almost 20. It's like 18:05 or something like that.
And it basically documents and has a narrative component that surrounds a trip that you took with Blondie and Debbie Harry, your friend, to Cuba a couple of years back. And you were there for about a week or so. Is that right?
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about it because, press and stuff. I was like, how long were we there? But it turns out it was 7 days. And there were two shows, so back to back each night at this great theater in Havana. And they had never been there before. So that was kind of why I decided to pitch it. And usually people come to me and say, what would you do for this? And that was the first thing I think I've ever pitched on my own out of, just saying we need to document this because it's never happening again. And so somehow I did it. I still don't know actually how. It was kind of insane.
Were you doing the camera work too?
Some of it, not all of it. Nick Weisner, who I call him the Indiana Jones of cinematographers, because he is, I mean, he's amazing. He's an incredible cinematographer, but he also is like, it was just he and I, really. I mean, we did have other cameramen for the live shows who didn't speak English. And luckily, Nick also is fluent. He's from originally from, God, where is he from originally? Colombia. And so that was a real help, you know, but he is like, he's down for anything. And we shot almost all of it on 16 millimeter and 8 millimeter real film, which was
beautiful.
Really, really beautiful. I'm happy, but it was also the most stressful thing. Getting it there and getting the equipment there to a communist country and then hoping that the film was exposed correctly. You know, I mean, I hadn't worked in film in so long that it was like, wow, this is stressful. But it was also an adventure, which I love. So. Oh,
and don't you have to keep 16 millimeter and 18 and 8 millimeter in a certain temperature?
Yeah, I mean, I think he put it in the mini bar of the hotel. You know, it was very like, wow, okay, fingers crossed. And it had to go through all the scanning stuff. And I don't know if you've ever been to Cuba or Havana, but when you go with that kind of thing, you have to have this very, very meticulous itemized list of everything you're bringing in. And if you do not have the same stuff going out, there's problems. You know, so you have to have the exact same lenses, the exact same, you know, because all the black market or all of that. So that was, you know, another thing. And then also checking, we didn't want to check the you know, his cameras for damage. So I had one, he had what we had to carry it on. I mean, it was really like kind of different than my usual
treks.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
it was amazing. It was amazing. Havana is so amazing.
Yeah, it's sort of like, from what I understand, it's a period place. You know, it's a different period in time, almost frozen in that time.
Yeah, that's why I'm so glad, even though it was challenging to shoot on film, it added the fact that it is real film and not a filter like most people do now that make things look filmic. It's actual film. It looks like a timeless. You don't really know what time, you know, it is with the cars and the it's just amazing there, especially at night. I didn't get a lot of night shots because it's very hard to light that because it's very dark there. But I at night sometimes didn't know where I was or what year it was. It's so mysterious. And, you know, there's not anything to really give you a sense of where, what, like that it's 2019 when we were there. There was, you know, there's also like not a lot of people on phones, which is actually kind of nice. So it was, yeah, it was like a dreamlike place.
And there were a couple of different, several different themes that you break it down into. I was reading a little summary of it. Do you want to get into that?
Well, originally, it's funny. I tried to make a short film that was big. I think that's how I described it. And I was going to do three. I have it in three separate parts, and they're cut up into air, fire, and water. Not in that order. Water, fire, air. And they were originally going to come out separate, like one a day online or something. And then when we put them all together, I just realized it flowed really well and worked. So I said, well, let's just keep it as one complete film. And in each one, yeah, I just touch upon ideas. And, you know, the idea about music and the ideas about New York and Havana's cultural hubs, and also a little bit into, you know, little politics about our relationship to that, you know, country. And then also, you know, I mean, I guess it's written in some of the things, the fact that Chris Stein, who is the one who was the reason this happened, he wanted to go to Havana his whole life. And that's how it kind of came. And the Ministry of Culture was doing this kind of cultural exchange stuff. And so anyway, it happened. And on the way to the airport, I found out he wasn't going. So that was kind of the big surprise. And that's kind of in the last part of it.
And we won't reveal that now.
Well, I mean, it's like it's in some things written. So, but it's still, I don't know if it's a spoiler alert. I mean, it's a short film, but it made the whole thing a little bittersweet.
So, I mean, visually it's captivating, and then thematically, you know, is it poignant?
I think in some sections it is. I mean, you're asking the person who made it, so I don't know how. You know, I have yet to sit in front with an audience to watch it and how it is react. You know, it's only played in one festival in Italy, which I couldn't go to, but I think it did well. But I wasn't there, so it's hard to know what the poignant moments are. I do know that the nice thing is the Tribeca Film Festival, the curator did say it was one of her top five favorite ones she watched, which is really nice to know because she watches everything.
Right.
So that was kind of a nice thing to hear. I just did what I wanted. I mean, that's the upside of not having any money. You know, it was like a budget of so low, but you really do get to do what you want. I mean, that is always the exchange of, if you don't have a lot of investors or a lot of, you know, money people, they will then in the post or even on the shoot try to dictate or try to whatever. And I didn't have that. I just did literally whatever I wanted. And it took a year to do the post because it was such a low budget. I had to do like kind of favor stuff with people. So anyway, but that's the upside, is that, you know, I got to make, I don't know, the thing I wanted to make. So,
and when you sit back and you know, you reflect on what influences your approach, you know, you're a theater person, you're a music person, you're a painter, you do a lot of different things. Could you see, we talked about this last time, I remember, it was fascinating how a lot of times you paint when you're doing theater.
Oh, yeah. I always said, I think one of the funny things, if there's someone younger who's like, do you have any advice, you know, and I advice is so, it just doesn't work for me. You know, I don't know what to tell anyone because everyone's story is different. But I do say, take a painting course. And they always look at me like I'm kind of crazy. But it is the most fundamental advice I can give because it has everything. You just learn about, at least I did. So I approach everything that way. And with the film, too, I think in the beginning there was a producer who was, I guess, challenged by how I was approaching it. And they didn't understand the structure. I was layering it, basically. You know, I didn't even know I was doing three sections until a certain point. It's not like I go in, I kind of layer it all like a painting, and then I'll go back and do another layer. And it kind of, that's kind of my process, I suppose, with not just film, but theater too. I mean, I have a really, obviously, a very strong desire and idea fundamentally, but as far as like editorially and animation, it's like a layering process. So it doesn't, some people don't work well that way.
and if it's layered correctly, in your view, based on what you're trying to accomplish, what comes out of it?
I think it just becomes a bit more poetic, for lack of a better way of, I mean, I said to the editor, Ben, who is young, you know, this young guy, and I'd never worked with him before, and I liked him, but as we were beginning, you know, of it, he was rigid, you know, he had a, and I said to him at one point, I said, I am going to turn you into a poet if it kills me, and I kind of did, you know, at the end, we laugh about it. He really, really did, at a certain point, figure out what I was talking about and go for it. I think it's also because I'm very, like, just try it, do it. If I don't like it, I'll tell you. You know, don't get so restricted because of your commercial world. You know, then that, I understand how that happens because I still work in it. It can be very, you know, fear based, like, oh, I'm doing it wrong, or it's too weird, you know. And I just go for it, go far, and I'll pull back when I don't like it. I'll just tell you, and find the rhythm, you know. It's like music. Editing is like music to me. It's a musical way of, it's like beats and pauses and how it flows and what images you can juxtapose. You know, like, it's, I love editing. I mean, if I could, you know, it's another thing I have done, but I was lucky to get Ben. He was great.
Yeah, and I like the poetry part based on what I would imagine. If you're there for 7 days and you have all, I'm sure you had much, much more than 18 minutes worth of material.
Not too much more.
Really?
Well, think about it. I mean, I didn't have the budget to get that many rolls of film.
Okay.
So you know, that was the other challenge is math. Mathematically, I am terribly challenged, but it is about the length of, literally the length of film that you have and how many minutes. So I had to be, that's another thing. I had to go back in my usual way and say, okay, I have to be a little more restrictive about, or make better choice about what we're shooting. You know, like don't meander and just blah, 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 because we don't have that much. We literally don't have that much spool, you know? So, and we pretty much squeezed out everything. But luckily everything was beautiful. There's rarely, you know, rarely anything in it that I was like, oh, why did I do that? You know?
Is it chronological, you know, pretty much based on your experience?
Kinda, not really. It's more of a kaleidoscope of what happened. I mean, it's more of a portrait and a meditation. You know, everyone's like, "Oh, it's a documentary." I'm like, "It is a doc," but it kind of it documents. It's more of a portrait of a moment that happened because we didn't get to go deep. You know, we were there for 7 days. It was kind of crazy. The theater, although as you know, beautiful and amazing, was technically very difficult. You know, I thought we were gonna blow the circuits at one point. And but the real thing about it is the energy that I tried to capture what the energy of the people who came to see the show and the people we met in the street, because Nick can, you know, he can converse. I had a little bit more because of Nick and his language, you know, that he could speak. I had a little more access. So we got to really meet people, but we didn't go deep, like all over the island or there for 3 weeks or, you know. So it's a bit, it's like a mini portrait of what happened.
And how does Debbie Harry and Chris Stein, I know Chris wasn't there, but he narrates from what I understand too. How do they fit into all of this?
Well, that's the thing is Chris wanted to go his whole life. He's fascinated with Cuba and it's because of him. And so he does, you know, he has his comments about it all. And Debbie, it was as like everything. It was like an adventure. And she is totally excited and open to seeing what it would be like. And they, you know, the funny thing, too, is when they worked with the Cuban musicians, because it was a two-night, you know, of different bands, of Cuban bands and them, and some of them sat in with Blondie. And they, I was there for rehearsal. It really, they did not have a very long rehearsal. They didn't have a lot of time, but it was amazing. And it's kind of this amazing thing about music where you can just, if you're really proficient and get it, you can just drop in and just kind of, you know, pick it up and get it. So that was really, for me, really personally amazing to watch, because I perform and I sing, but I don't play any instruments. So that was amazing to watch.
And were they doing tunes that were Blondie tunes as well as some of the tunes that are more in line with the musicians from Cuba?
Well, they sat in on two Blondie songs. The Tide Is High, obviously, because that's kind of this, you know, Caribbean reggae song of Blondie. So that was great. And we put the horns in, and that was just amazing to have the live horns. And they also did Rapture with a conga player, you know, this amazing conga player, and that was very cool. So it had, you know, it just kind of like added, it was a nice fusion. I thought it was really cool. I mean, I knew that this was never going to happen again. So I was happy that I pushed hard to at least document it in a tiny short, but at least it exists.
This is a long relationship, really, that you have with Debbie, isn't it? You guys are friends for quite some time now.
Yeah, I don't even know how long. I think we met in 95, I think. I don't know. What's that math? I'm terrible with. See, that's why I was bad with the spools of film.
in the bar that you kept in the refrigerator of the room.
Yes, of the mini bar.
Of the mini bar.
I have to ask. I can't, you know, it was so fast and furious that I'd have to ask Nick, like, how did we do that again?
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
And, you know, I'm really fascinated by how multifaceted you are as an artist and all the friendships you have. I mean, you're talented, obviously, but, you know, you must really be a pretty cool person because you have some of the coolest friends. I noticed because, we connect through Instagram and you're friends with Parker Posey, you know, who I've always had a crush on, you know.
Oh, well, who hasn't?
Yeah, I know. She's amazing.
Yeah.
And Debbie Harry and so on and so on and so on. Yeah. I mean, is it?
Yeah, but that's just New York, really. I mean, that's like, I mean, it's not about that. You think I'm a cool person, but I'm sure there's many who would disagree with you. But as far as the people I know, they're all artists. You know, I love artists. I love people. So a lot of my friends are creative, interesting people. I mean, some of them are more famous than others, but. You know, I mean, Parker and I are also the exact same age, so we have all the same references and all the same kind of, you know, take on that. But it's also, like I was going to say, it's New York. I mean, that's how I know, you know, you just meet people in New York when you're doing theater and film and music and, you know, it's inevitable. So, I mean, I've met many, many people. It doesn't mean I ended up becoming really good friends with them.
No.
Some people are better personalities than others.
I'm sure. I mean, one thing that I hang out with a lot of artists, too. I love artists. The ego is a big thing, right? And also
the
sense of insecurity. When that can make things weird, you know?
Yeah. Well, we all have it. I have it, too. So I get it. And it comes and goes. And it also, there's different levels. I mean, I'm not anywhere near there, you know, like Parker or Rebecca Hall or all, you know, my friends who are really, you know, I forget sometimes, but it's all the same kind of thing. It's just different levels. You know, everybody has these kind of insecurities or it's very hard, particularly perform like actor. I mean, you're putting yourself literally out there on film for, you know, and so it's nerve wracking. Whereas I think a painter at least has a more, you know, private time until they reveal it. It's different, but it's still the same idea of like, okay, I'm giving this to the world. Uh-oh.
And do they care?
Happen?
Right.
Yeah, do they care? Or, I mean, I always, my new thing though is if I can sit with it and like the film, for example, I would do a lot of stuff different, but I can sit with it. I wish I had more money and time and, you know, I wish I had done a feature length, all of these things I can think of. But generally, if I can sit and watch it and, you know, and sit with it and be like, okay, I did that. Next.
Right. You know, it's not anything to be upset or embarrassed about. If other people don't get it, hey, that's going to happen. But you're good with it. Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, there's so many people who are not going to like it. I mean, I've had mixed reviews on things and it's disappointing, but I don't know if I've ever been totally slammed. I mean, I've had my first tabloid thing was in the UK, which was very funny because it was so stupid. And then I was also recently, this thing keeps happening with this other Rob Roth, who is this, he's a director of like Beauty and the Beast on Broadway, you know? And they keep using my photo for all his like scandals and, or whatever. And so I had to finally get a publicist to change it. I mean, it's just, you know, it's absurdist and kind of funny. I mean, it's not when you're in it as the person from outside, it's kind of a good idea for a film.
It is. That should be your next project, baby.
Believe me, I've thought about it.
I'm the real Rob Roth, you know, or something to that.
I'm the poor one. You're the rich one. But it's just very funny, the whole, you know, how, particularly now, how press and social media and stuff is, it's so, I don't know, it's like on steroids or something. It's so, there's so much of it, you know.
Yeah.
For good and bad.
Yeah. I guess so. It's hard to sift through it. I mean, you and I are about the same age, I believe. So we have similar references too. And, you know, not so long ago, you had the opportunity, and you didn't realize it, to be disconnected more easily than you. And I think that was wonderful, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I mean also about Havana. I mean, you know, there's a lot of bad, you know, situations there with their system and communism, you know, but there's also, I'm telling you, there were barely anyone on phones. And I just felt like I was watching, I mean, it's even in the film, I was just watching people skateboard and play and talk. I mean, there were no phones. No one was like, so there, that to me was really interesting. And I thought, you know, well, what is that like? You know, how are they going to be different than, you know, our structure here with everyone like literally looking down constantly. I mean, it's very weird. If you really, you know, especially in the city, if you stop for a moment and look up, so many people are looking down, like at their phones. It's a very strange thing. So I think they're missing stuff, and I think we're adjusting because it's so new. You know, too. I think it's just a new form of addiction.
That's a great word to use. It is definitely an addiction. There's no doubt.
Oh, it's another one. It's a new one. Yay, another one to get addicted to. You know, it's always something.
So, Rob Roth, by the way, we're talking with New York City-based multidisciplinary artist and director. And multidisciplinary, is that right? Is that the right word?
I mean, it always changes that word. It's like, you know, it used to be multimedia, and then it was, I don't even remember. Now multidisciplinary. I'm sure that there'll be a new word for it. Lunatic, I really should say.
Well, you're very dynamic, and you definitely have the eye, the heart, the soul, from what I garner, just talking with you a couple of times, of an artist. And that leads me to wonder, you know, how often are you taken aback by just your everyday navigation of the world?
Oh, frequently. I mean, I particularly in the last, I mean, I watched, I don't know, this is the first thing that came to my head, was I watched that QAnon series on, I think it's on HBO.
Yep, I've been watching
Into the Storm or whatever it's called. And I mean, I was half totally fascinated and half totally horrified. And it's just this, you know, so I guess that's, I don't know if that's answering your question. I mean, that took me aback. Like, I just thought, wow, we are really, I'm going to say screwed. I remember the last time we did this, I was cursing left and right. So I apologize for that. Whoever has to bleep me out, I felt really bad. That person had to do that. So anyway, we are screwed, you know, with the I don't know, just this whole new world. I mean, that was the dumbest cult ever. If you could, you know, it's real culty.
It still exists. It's not over.
Oh, yeah, I shouldn't say. Yeah, you're right. It is totally gonna. But it's like, of all the cults, it's kind of the dumbest cult because there's no real leader. You don't know who it is. It's an invisible. It's bizarre.
You're not Q, are you? Maybe you're Q. I don't know.
Well, I've been Q forever. I mean, Q used to mean a lot of other.
Oh, yeah.
You know, queer and this and that. But Q is, I mean, it's so, it just shows how easy it is to kind of corral people now into, you know, I know it's nothing new. There's like the snake oil salesman who came to town and, Or the preacher who told everyone they're going to hell and they have to do it. But so it's you know, it's in that same kind of manipulation, but it's on this scale of like,
right, it's the scale.
Nobody knows who it is, yet they still believe this is a real person, and this is wild. So anyway, I don't know if I digressed, but
that
takes me aback lately. That has taken me aback.
Well, you know, I was at a baseball practice, one of my sons, and I was talking to this guy who's a very nice guy in many ways. Our boys are playing baseball together. And then he starts going off on Q philosophy. And I'm standing there like, oh my gosh, what do I do?
You know, back up slowly.
I just took it in. I just listened to him, and I would say things that were affirming but not agreeing. Like, oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. And it was, I felt afterwards very, very torn because, again, he seems like a nice guy, but he obviously is not, because the things that he's talking about, you know, in the context of Q are racist, anti-Semitic, you know, crazy, oppressive. Yeah. So it's hard to tell who's who and what's what, and it's sad, and we are in a bad spot, I think, as you said. Where are we going? How do you get through when you realize, when you're taken aback in this way?
Oh, I'm taken aback, but I also, I don't know, my experience in life has been, it's always, you know, I'm always meeting people who have wackadoo ideas, and everybody wants to feel right. That was the one thing I told somebody recently. I said, our biggest problem, well, there's so many problems, not the biggest. One of the things I've noticed in America is we have a very hard time saying, oh, I was wrong, or I'm sorry. It isn't part of our, like, story. You know, like, everyone has to be right about everything. It also has to have a reason. Oh, you don't have a good job because these people took it away from you, which isn't the truth. It's so much more complex and deep than that. But it's just, they need someone to blame and then feel that they're right. You know, that's what I've noticed, is no one can say, wow, I was wrong. You know, or, oof, that was, you know, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. It's always to the grave, it seems, that people are like, nope.
Right.
I was right. Nope, it's this, it's that, it's the Russians, it's the Mexicans, it's this. I mean, it's just like, wow, okay. But it's easy that's the easy way. That's why. People, it's in my opinion, it's easy to say stuff like that. It's harder to dig deeper and understand, you know, the more complex reasons.
Right.
In modern world, why we are where we are.
And you think that's pretty unique to the United States, our citizens, our fellow citizens.
Well, I can only say that because I live here. I'm sure it's, I mean, there's many, many problems like this in Europe. And I mean, it's humans. Let's face it. That's the other thing. I don't think it's unique to America. I think we have our own brand of it. I think we're very good at it. You know, that's our kind of, you know, it's this kind of, was like what happened even now with Biden. There's a strange what would you call it, like this not nationalism, because that's really extreme, but like this pride in one's country, and that's fine, but it's
exceptionalism.
Like
exceptionalism.
Yeah, it's like, I don't, you know, you're I don't know, peddling this to the wrong person. For me, it's just like, I don't know about that. But hey, again, it's people are flawed. We all are. I am. Everyone. I mean, you never can, you know, you have to keep learning. You're constantly going to stumble. And that's the point. And I don't think I think it's really about perfection now. Everyone wanting to be, I mean, I feel bad for kids. You have a son. I feel bad for kids who are on social media and everything has to be perfect. Like, they don't have this development time off camera, you know, like that I did when I grew up. Like, you didn't have this, or even in the arts, like, you know, spending 10 years downtown performing and developing without having someone, 10 people shoot you on a phone and post it the next day, you know, or in school, you know, these kids, like, it has this psychological effect, I think, where you're trying, you're afraid to almost do anything, maybe. I could be wrong, but.
Rob Roth.
Here I am on my tiny soapbox.
No, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. I love your soapbox. So we're just about out of time for this conversation. Oh. I'd love to have you on again. Do you want to sum it up with a I don't know, a phrase, a word? Do you want to send a message out to the throngs of listeners?
Carry on, carry on, keep carrying on. It's going to be okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. I can't wait to watch the short film. And, you know, the pronunciation.
I think you did it right.
Did I?
Vivir en La Habana. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I can't speak Spanish well, but that's, you were pretty good. Most people mess it up.
Thank you. Until next time, sir. Have a wonderful spring and summer, and hopefully we cross paths again soon.
I hope so. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye. Thank you.
divina y de tener tan linda perfección. Tal vez será que soy a la vitrina, serán los filtros reinos del amor. Luego vendrán los celos del cariño de aquel volcán que llama tentadora, y tú podrás lograr que yo te quiera, porque tú has sido mi única ilusión.
From Dreaming of Debbie by Lisa Lentini, from the March 1st, 2021 edition of Spin magazine. Debbie Harry, quite possibly the most iconic woman in music, doesn't know she's an icon. It must have been 25 years ago when I spotted Debbie Harry floating down an Alphabet City street in Manhattan, clutching not a purse, but a small dog, her signature blonde lob glowing like a crown of light. Years later, I saw her in the 2000 Axis Theater production of Sarah Kane's play Crave, a brilliant beacon in an ensemble cast. That was definitely after she starred with one of my exes in an indie short film, and also after, I think, I was lunching with an acquaintance who casually mentioned that Debbie was in the audience of her friend's Lower East Side play, and brought her dog along to that, too. When you live in New York, star sightings are somewhat rote, and amidst the churning hustle and bustle, you rarely even have time to report. Debbie Harry isn't someone who's seen in New York. Debbie Harry is New York. And while the Statue of Liberty undoubtedly governs Liberty Bay, Debbie takes Manhattan, her platinum torch lighting the way for all who wander with creative purpose below 14th Street. Even more, everyone knows Debbie, or at least thinks they do. Oh yeah, I know Debbie, you'll hear every other person say, and they all mean it. This is the punk sans glam side of Debbie, the one that considers herself inarguably human in spite of her accidental iconic status. The word icon describes Debbie Harry perfectly. You could draw her image with your eyes closed. In fact, when flipping through her 2019 memoir, Face It, it's peppered with loving fan art, all attempting to capture the idea of Debbie. Her blondie signature mop, her heart-shaped pout, her flawless face. There's a reason so many can't help but try to recreate her. It's the same with all things astoundingly beautiful. It's tempting to try to ensnare them into your net. But it'll never entrap her true essence. There are rock stars, there are musicians, and then there are artists. These are the various descriptors for those in the music industry. The latter has lost its true meaning as it's used for, well, every bleepin' one. But an artist, a true artist, lives, breathes, and believes in art. Not just the art they create, but the understanding that they are part of something deeply cultural and lasting. Debbie Harry is a believer. She's an artist.
Mantras. 84 years and counting. My father astounds me. He just keeps existing. My mother keeps taking care of him. I wonder where they both find the strength within. It seems perhaps it is a long set of rituals and mantras and some sort of love that perpetuates it all. My mom is a Calabricella doll.
I'm gonna tell you how it's gonna be. Are you gonna give your love to me? You know my love will not fade away. Oh, well, you know my love will not fade away.
try to show it and you're driving me back. Your love for me got to be real for you to know just how I feel. A love for real, not fade away.
Episode 419 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, artist Rob Roth, our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, writer Lisa Lentini, Spin Magazine, and these musical artists, Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, LCD Sound System, The Grateful Dead, The Buena Vista Social Club, Blondie, Buddy Holly and the Crickets, Terrence Blanchard and Branford Marsalis II. And, of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.